This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, John Legaisa of The Athletic and MB Fantasy Life will join us. Do a little baseball. Do a lot of baseball with John, actually. Pretty much all baseball with John. I'll do a little college hoops off the top here before we get to John. But I wanted to balance it a little bit because once these tournaments start and they are underway, you wake up Friday and we're at that time of the year where you wake up, there's college hoops on. You go to bed, there's college hoops on. We're going to do a lot. You know, once these tournaments start, it's going to be all, pretty much, if not all, heavily college basketball for, for the next few weeks, the next month or so. I wanted to mix in some baseball to balance it a little bit. These tournaments and what it's hard about, it's great this time of the year, but what's hard about it, at least from a podcast, from a recording these standpoint, is these games come so fast and furious. So to sit here and preview like the Friday games, you know what, some of these games start at noon, and by the time you listen to this, it might be the game might be over, which makes it tough from that aspect. But for the conferences that start on Friday, again, we had a bunch tip off Wednesday and Thursday, and they're pretty much all going to be in swing here over the next couple of days. The big conferences finish up this weekend, and then they will start midweek, and we are raring to go here as we inch up, creep towards Selection Sunday. 2 weeks from now will be a day into the tournament, so looking forward to it. Just a great time of the year. But the SoCon or the Big South starts on Friday. High Point a -200 favorite, don't have anything there. CAA also starts Friday. Wilmington a 2-1 short shot there. I know some people, a friend of the show Stucky was tweeting about this, that he liked Drexel. Maybe it was on his podcast. We like Drexel at 20-1. There's still some 16-1 out there. I don't have anything. I haven't watched a ton of these teams. I'm always rooting for Hofstra because Hofstra hasn't been to the tournament in forever. I think it was 2001 or 2002. And they won this tournament in 2020. And literally the next day is when the world shut down due to COVID, and they never got to play in this tournament. So, but Hofstra does not have a good team this year. They're 30-1, but that is a team I'm at least rooting for. As far as these other ones, there's not a ton. I mentioned, some of the ones on the Wednesday show that I like. The one that is catching my eye a little bit, McNeese at -500 is unbettable, but I do think they win. St. Mary's up to +150 in some spots. They're just better than Gonzaga. I think there's a name brand thing with Gonzaga where they're being, to me, overrated. St. Mary's beat them twice. I know the whole thing. Wow, it's hard to beat a team three times. Stats don't really back that up. In theory, it makes sense if you're close-ish teams, where just sort of the law of averages of, well, let's compare it to a coin flip where, all right, if you think these teams are even, if the coin lands on heads once and lands on heads twice, what are the chances it's going to land on heads a third time? Well, a lot of people say it's 50-50 because it's heads or tails. And you can even strengthen that point by saying maybe it's not even a fair coin, because if one team is beating the other team twice and they're playing a third time, maybe it's just a matchup standpoint or a talent standpoint of this team, can't rebound with that team, or that team can't defend the other team. So keep that in mind. I know you're going to hear that over these next, 10 days or so with these conference tournaments, and you're going to see a lot of rematches, a lot of teams meeting for the third time. Well, this team won two times. What are the odds they're going to win a third time? So it happens more than you think. The statistics of it's hard to beat a team three times doesn't really bear itself out, but that's really the only one I would add. I mean, there's not a ton. A lot of these, it's just hard when you get these conferences like the NEC, where Central Connecticut's a huge favorite. High Point's a big favorite. We had Kev O'Neill on Monday show making a case for High Point. Once they get in the tournament, they could be feisty. I could see that. Looks like our Illinois State team, who I talked about on Wednesday, and I gave Todd Wishnev credit. Then I went to follow the money, and I talked about Illinois State too. And I guess I didn't give him credit on that time, and he got mad at me because he was listening to it. He needs a lot of credit, a lot of attention. I liked it as well as he did, but the fact that he liked it, I have so much respect for him, it put me over the top. So it wasn't like all him, but the fact that he liked it, I have respect for his opinions. But if I don't say it every time I mention that team, he gets really, really upset with me. They are blowing out Missouri State, so it looks like they will advance, and they will be three wins away from a tournament. So if you jumped in on that one at 15-1, hey, you still got some work to do. You were a favorite. You were supposed to win this game. But that's one that that's at least live here going into the weekend, as talked about how Drake at -110, 5-0 in overtimes. They're good, but they're vulnerable. They turn the ball over a lot, and they play slow, and they play a lot of close games, which makes them vulnerable to an upset. So I think that's one where we'll see if Illinois State has a chance. I do think they're live to make a run. I think this tournament is more wide open than people might think. But let's talk a little baseball. Plenty of hoops still to come these next couple of weeks. John Legaisa, Fantasy Life, The Athletic, that is next. This Should a bit more podcast. All right, we are back. Should a bit more podcast. You can catch him at The Athletic, MB Fantasy Life. It is our buddy. He's back. It is the great John Legesa. John, we're almost there, man. It's March. March Madness right around the corner. Spring training is full underway. How's it going, man? How's everything?
Tis the season, man. You're letting the Tasmanian devil out of the cage. I'm so ready. I'm so ready. You know, it couldn't. As soon as the Super Bowl wraps up, I was already shifting into baseball, but now, like, for me, it's MLB season.
Let me just, we'll start with this before we get to specific teams, specific players.
Sure.
What is your process like? How do you start? There's so much data to go over with all the teams. There are so many players. There's so many markets in terms of league leaders and over-unders. Like, what is your process for just starting and getting a handle on, you know, this baseball season?
It's funny, being a fantasy wonk actually helps betting because, you know, I'm really focused on NFL and MLB. I get that little soft spot between seasons. So, you know, where other people are really focused on NBA and college basketball, I kind of pump the brakes. I do my gambling in the stock market, you know, when I need to scratch that itch. But I'm really focused on the data, like you're saying, because not only is it important to be organized, compartmentalized, there's a mountain of data, but also, like I mentioned, fantasy, that's where a lot of the science behind the game happens. And now, not all of it is relevant. So part of my job is to see what are the fantasy heads into, what has changed, right? A lot of advanced analytics. And I think this season, maybe the last two seasons, it's been a lot of development in the understanding of pitching, right? The pitching analytics have gotten really granular. And now, while they're very fun to look at, I think we also need to not say necessarily pump the brakes on them, but figure out what we need to pump the brakes on. So usually that's my off-season mission is, along with all the data collection, which again comes with the fantasy stuff that I do. So I'm kind of OCD. So I have everything formatted, all the players, and even then something slipped through the cracks, but then kind of focus on the science of it. I can give you a pretty good example. If you have just a second, it was, you know, when we heard the league talk about changing the ball a little bit, we then noticed that a great stat like barrels, for example, right? We love barrels. Barrels stopped having the same impact that they were having. You know, the, you want to call it a barrel to home run conversion rate or whatever, actually dropped. So it's important to know that stuff because what ended up happening was when they raised the seams, right, that increased drag, in particular for balls that were in the air. So guys that were hitting these towering home runs, obviously like your Judge home runs, those are going out anywhere. But guys that were just kind of clearing the fence with high exit velocity, high launch angle home runs, let's say, those weren't doing the same amount of damage. So that's just one example of, you know, how you might pick up something in the analytical streets that we can then apply to the betting streets, you know, because totals are huge. Missing by a run is going to hurt you almost every time.
Have you made any bets yet for the season?
Yeah, I have a couple of futures bets. For me, you know, when we're talking process, I think that's probably the most important thing is regiment what you have to bet and work backwards from there. Because the futures market right now, the season hasn't started. So these are kind of open-ended bets right now, meaning, you know, it's not like I generally, because I have a history in stock trading, like I mentioned before, there I use a daily allotted risk by percentage reflected in units and then work backwards. So I never over-lever because, you know, units are can be useful, let's say, but they need to be defined. They shouldn't be nebulous. What I mean is, if a bettor has just a unit without tying it to percentage of stack, well, then if you have 30 bets, is that 30% of your stack? Or if you have 10 bets opposed to 40 or 2 opposed to 20, how does that affect your road to ruin? So for me, in the futures market, it's very important to kind of allot a percentage reflected in a unit amount and work backwards. Because again, if you are betting one or two things every day, all of February and all of March, all of a sudden, you really may be over-levered in a market that you don't want to be, in particular when it comes to minus 110 futures, which, again, are not bad. And if you think you have an edge, you should pursue that. But for me, I don't really like to hang my money on the shelf for 6 months for minus 110. That's a price we can get not just every day, but every hour of every day for the next 6 months. So, not to say I like to focus just on long shots, but I think that fits more into my plan, where I don't want to be overlevered, where I think it's worth laying the money for so long.
Anything in the market that you like, that you would suggest, that you look at and just think, hey, that number is just flat out wrong, or that number, I have an edge here or there.
Well, those are generally the 110 bets, so it's not like I'm avoiding them. But
Okay.
for example, I think the Padres are really, really undersung right now. They won 93 games, and I don't like to call them luck, the luck games. I'm doing air quotes for anybody watching. But from the year before, those are your extra inning and one run games. The Padres performed just atrociously in 2023. We expected that to regress in 2024. It did, but it didn't like overly swing, meaning they could have won 97 last year had those completely swung in a, the other way to positive regression. So I think they pretty much had a true talent output. They spent the entire offseason talking about shedding salary and dangling Cease. Well, in reality, they actually added Nick Pivetta, which is like a frontline starter. They got him on a great deal, but still, he's a legitimate SP2, SP3 in a lot of places. He's only going to be asked to be the SP4 for the Padres. They brought in Jason Adam last year to bolster the bullpen. So they're pretty good. Manny Machado, full healthy offseason. Same for Tatis. He's done riding motorcycles off a mountaintop or whatever he was doing to get himself in trouble. But the bottom line is, they're a really good team. Jackson Merrill was fantastic in his rookie year, and the sky's the limit for this young man. He could, or he is the type of player that could earn MVP votes. So the Padres, I think, they're 85 and a half, so we're talking, six full games off last year's total. And I think that's just a factor of living in the Dodgers' shadow right now. So just in total, I'm high on the Padres compared to the market. Conversely, I'm low on the Astros compared to the market. Everyone, we have these biases that we carry both directions, right? Good teams and bad teams, the bad teams we LOL, and the good teams we automatically push to the top. The Astros are at 88 games. I'm not seeing that. It's a vastly improved division, right? Texas is, man, I mean, I know all those guys have had Tommy Johns before, but we don't know when those injuries are going to manifest again. And right now, they're really good. Texas even brought in Berger for the back end of the lineup. They're going to be a lot better than they were last year. So I think that division's gotten a lot tougher out west, and I'm probably lower on the market than the Astros.
You mentioned long shots. Any long shots you did take, or any long shots you're looking at?
No, I don't. Oh, there was one that's kind of crossed my desk just recently. Those, I think I want a little more information because a lot of those are player based.
Okay.
And we want to make sure if it's a pitcher that he's healthy on opening day, right? We're at that point of the year where, oh, Louis Hill is broken and he's going to miss, 6 months. Well, if you placed a bet on him, those go valid the second he takes the mound. And the book doesn't care if you were late. If you were early on the news. So I'm being a bit reticent because I want to make sure these guys are throwing. One that I do really, really like is the youngster on the Braves, Spencer Schwellenbach, to lead the league in wins, which are kind of very wonky, but he does check all the boxes. Unbelievably so, I think the workloads get lost in the shuffle sometimes when we're players are crossing levels. Did you know he threw 214 innings last year across three or four different levels? I mean, in today's day and age, that's pretty crazy. Like, that's not something guys do anymore, maybe short of like Logan Webb, right? The guys we're expecting 200 innings from, it's a very, very, very short list. So for him to do that at such a young age, there should be no reins on him. He's shown an in-game ability to go deep, and the Braves are awesome. Right, so I no one can predict wins. Again, that's a kind of a fantasy thing, but wins are very difficult to predict. But if you want to predict them, let's pick a team that should be really good, right? The Braves are projecting to be one of the better teams in the league. He's going to be a frontline starter for them, and they're just stacked top to bottom, even without Acuña to start the year, to bring in, Profar another year from Harris. Albies is fully healthy. Riley is back fully healthy. Olsen's amazing. So yeah, I think that was 50 to 1.
It's a good
So
number.
yeah, 50 to 1 is a pretty good number for a guy that again, just checks all those boxes. For a guy like myself that does drop a lot of numbers and my nose is buried in the spreadsheet, for something like wins, you want to, let's keep it simple, right? He has a good workload. He has shown the ability to go deep into games, and he has that workload behind him. So, yeah, let's go.
How many wins for the Dodgers?
Oh my God, a lot, a lot, a lot. They're set at 103 and a half right now, 104. You know, I don't want to call it the old school better me, but just the seasoned better in me says, well, that's something we probably want to go under on. Same way for the converse of that, right? The inverse, the White Sox. When you see 53 and a half, from what I understand, I think it was one of your guys too. Someone from VSiN, I think, put out that was the lowest posted total in over 35 years. So where I would normally say, oh, 103 and a half, you almost automatically go under, and 53 and a half, you almost automatically go over. Maybe I'm pumping the brakes on a new style of organizational management, let's say. So I don't think I would hang 110 on for 6 months for 104 total, but yeah, if anyone's going to do it, they're going to do it. You're a better. And I think one way that we want to look at these future totals, I think there's probably a two-headed monster here, right? Are they going to be favored every day? The Dodgers are a check. And then are they going to add at the deadline? Because this in particular is something, dude, I have gotten myself into trouble as a younger man trying to snatch those low lines that I want to go over on. The Marlins always came to mind because they generally had good pitching staffs with bad offenses, bad bullpens. But the problem is, anybody that's worth their weight in salt at the deadline, you know, they're selling off everything that isn't
Right.
nailed down. So I'm finding if I am betting totals, they're more overs or under, let's say under a high number, right? I don't want to go over these low numbers. If you've dug into the White Sox roster, shameless self-promotion incoming, you mentioned Fantasy Life. I'm doing team previews right now, MLB, and you know, I put my little flair on it with some stats, projections, outlooks, and then a bet at the end. And again, it's free. You know, you can check it out at Fantasy Life under the betting tab. That White Sox team is really bad. They're really bad. They might not be a favorite once all season.
I think the enthusiasm is the wrong word, but the positive,
What's the opposite?
the positives, if you're going to look at the White Sox, is people. I know some people think that the prospects that they've got in some of these trades and some of these young players in the minors are ready to contribute. And I guess the other way of looking at it, to support that point, how bad could you really be? And they lost a lot of leads late last year, so maybe they hold on to some of those. I actually know some people that took. Now I think the number's gone, like over 49.5, over 50.5. I think it's bumped up a couple wins, so it's a point of like how low can you actually go to actually take an under.
How low can you go? Yeah, I absolutely hear you. My first instinct is that's entirely too low. There was a time when being a 100 loss team was not to say unheard of, but it was almost like a mark. You know, it was something that was it was worthy of note, let's say. And now we're just expecting them to lose 110 or whatever. So yeah, I get you, and I wouldn't push back too hard. My thing with the youngsters, and again, it's not so much Chicago is this is a blanket statement. Now that they've changed that rule where teams can get an extra pick if a player wins the Rookie of the Year, I think teams are more willing to start the year with prospects. And if they haven't started the year with a prospect and they're terrible, like the White Sox are going to be, I don't know if we're going to see them. You know, so some of those young guys, like Colson Montgomery, let's say he's only 23, first round pick. He struggled with some plate approach stuff. They may say, you know what? We don't care if we win 55, right? They don't care if they win 55, 58, or 62. That really doesn't matter at the end of the day. They may be more interested in getting him the seasoning that it takes to maybe push him for a Rookie of the Year. So you have to calculate all this stuff.
And what did they end up with last year? I'm trying to think. I know it was bad. I'm trying to think what the exact number was if you look it
What
up.
was the exact number last year? 41
41, right?
and one. Yeah, hey, they were just 51 and a half games out of the division, you know, just 51 and a half games out of the division. That's just remarkable to be 10 games further out of the division than your win total. There's so many things wrong with that. And they didn't do anything in the offseason, right? They didn't do anything. I'm looking now.
Well, they traded
Yeah.
Crochet. I mean, they got worse, if anything.
Right. They got notably worse. But and he was their best chance of being
Sure.
listed as a favorite
Right.
last year. And even that went the way of the dodo because they were so worried about him breaking down that they were only letting him go. Well, he was going 3 1/3 or 4 innings at the end of the year, which for somebody like me, that I prefer to bet F5s. You know, we could do a little bit of comp. I prefer to bet F5s once we hit in season. Again, I do all the modeling. So if anyone's interested in that stuff, just go to the Twitter handle at John Legeza, and it'll streamline all my work. But that's something I take very seriously, and I model every game, every day. And having done it for so many years now, and then going to back test this stuff, it's infinitely more accurate to model a 5-inning MLB sample only because the vast majority of starters go 5 innings. And once you get beyond that, trying to cap bullpens is really just crazy. And last point to that, and I this is what makes the light bulb go off for a lot of people, especially if you've bet the favorite, let's say, and they're tied after five, you probably want your money back, which is what you get if you push after five, right? If you, especially, I'm not a big juice guy. And again, I don't mean to disparage that, because if you have an edge, I think you should pursue that, right? I don't like to make these blanket statements for that. However, I would say if you laid minus 185, it probably had something to do with the starter. And if it's tied after five, you're very happy to get your money back, right?
Oh yeah. I just think of like the Tigers with Skubal. If you bet Skubal, and it's, you know, 2-2 after five. The reason you bet the Tigers is Skubal, and if it's, you know, getting into the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, I don't know how much of a piece of the Tigers you want. So that's I'm totally with you. Plus, there's a human element. Do I want to sit here and stress these coin flips of the ghost runner on second, the bullpens? You know what? I'll take my money. I'll go about my day. It's quicker. It's an hour and a half that first five innings, and you go on to the next one. So I'm completely with you. The first five.
You know what? Another great lead-in to expand on that, because again, of course, you should do this for a living. You're really good at this. Is when we deal with the ghost runner. So I've had that actually change. Again, the trading stuff always comes to the fore for me. I quite literally have a written plan, right? I have rules that I don't like. I won't bet the under in cores almost no matter what. And to that point, what you're mentioning, I won't bet full game unders
Same
anymore because of the ghost runner. If I bet an under, it's going to be F5. Right, and if it's a push, it's a push. If not, you get what you get, and you don't get upset. Because once you have a 1-1 game through nine, go over nine.
You're done. You
in
can't do it
extras,
anymore.
You can't do it anymore. Bingo, bango. Last thing to the F5 that I wanted to mention, because sometimes I mention this stuff and people like it. Well, really? Well, that to that point with the pitching, and even to the Marlins I mentioned before, there is a good way to profit off those bad teams with good pitchings, like the White Sox. We're very profitable as far as F5 run lines go, because you actually cash that bet on a tie. Oh, give that to me all day. I absolutely love that. I call it the race to 15 outs, right? That's it. It's a race to 15 outs. And if you think you have the pitching edge in a race to 15 outs where you can cash on a tie, in particular, if you're getting plus money, those are probably my favorite bets in season.
Yep, totally with you. How do you look at the AL East? Obviously, we're both Yankee guys. A lot of enthusiasm for the Red Sox, which I share, but I'm starting to worry. Like, man, everybody likes the Red Sox. Orioles are still there. How do you handicap this race? How good do you think the Yankees be? And what are your thoughts on this division overall?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be like a war of attrition, right? So there's going to be some self-emulation going on, right? They're going to feed on each other. Yankees, I'm seeing 91.5, though. My board is probably a couple days old. It was just, it's everybody in one spot, so I knew I'd have to reference it. That's probably right on the money. If anything, I'm probably a little bit lower. Hopefully I remember my point in this at the end of this. So Yankees, I think I'm lower. Red Sox, yeah, they're really good. They're pitching, they're hitting. They have something else that I didn't mention that you mentioned for the White Sox, is they're stacked with quality rookies. Like, they are just to the brim with quality rookies. There's like two or three guys that right now look like they could be MLB ready and ready to go. So they can lose pieces and have a very viable replacement, where the Yankees are losing pieces already. And it's just what it is right now. I can't believe it. You know, we took our first black eye when we lost a generational superstar free agent to the Mets, George spinning in his grave right now. But now Louis Hill is down. And it's looking pretty bleak for the Yankees, if you ask me. You try and replace a Soto with a guy like Bellinger, who I know there's a world where we're in love with his swing style and the way he pulls the ball and the short porch. That could work out. Same for kind of Goldschmidt, professional hitter. You need him to bounce back. He's on the wrong side of 35, right? And we saw where the Rizzo thing goes wrong, the Goldschmidt thing goes wrong, the same way the Rizzo thing goes wrong. DJ LeMahieu, who should have been in another in the Steinbrenner world of George, DJ would have been cut already, right? They would have moved on from that. That was a bad contract. They bought the Coors production that's long gone. I don't know what we're going to get at third base. Maybe we get Oswald Peraza, and how good is he going to be? We're asking for a lot from the Yankees. I don't think they're as good as the Orioles or the Red Sox, to be honest. They're missing some starting pitcher depth right now. Schmidt, I think, has even had some issues. So it's probably arrowed down for the Yankees. And to my point before, are they going to add? I don't know. It doesn't feel like it right now. It doesn't feel like it.
And when they do add, what do they add? It's always, to your point, it's always the discount aisle. It's always the lesser guy. It's
Yeah.
just, it's never. I mean, they got the fillet with Soto, but they couldn't keep him. It's always like, oh, we'll get Bellinger, he's on a discount. We'll get Goldschmidt, he's on a discount. I mean, going back for years, Rizzo instead of Freeman, not getting Harper, not getting
Oh, I
Seager. It's
mentioned
just, it
that.
drives you crazy. It drives you
I mentioned
absolutely
that
crazy.
on Gil's show last week. Freeman was right there. He's a perfect Yankee. Perfect Yankee. Great guy. And the money was too much, which is not something that we're really used to. I'm looking at the roster right now, and man, it is just replete with injury concerns also. I know injury prone is not necessarily a thing. We learned that playing fantasy baseball and football. But would you really go over, like, would you bet the over on 600 plate appearances for Jazz Chisholm? I wouldn't.
Well, that's the thing with Judge too, that this team cannot afford a Judge 1 month absence. And if you look at the back of his baseball card, some of it's been fluky, but he's 33. If he misses 3 or 4 weeks, boy, what does that lineup look like? I actually really like his under 49 and a half homers just because of the injury concern. And I think he's going to get either walked a lot or pitched very carefully, where he was coming up last year, man on first and second with Soto hitting in front of him. Now, it's two out, nobody on. He's throwing breaking balls in the dirt. And if he swings, he
Yep.
swings. If he doesn't, take first base and we'll deal with Bellinger. We'll deal with Goldschmidt. Stanton's hurt. I like the pitching. I like the bullpen, Devin Williams and Weaver. That's not a bad, I think the bullpen's improved, but yeah, it's going to be impossible to replace Soto. What NL East,
Yeah.
any thoughts? That's a good three-team race. Mets, who may not have enough pitching, but that's a great lineup. And then the Braves and Phillies still obviously really good.
Yeah, that's the big thing with the Mets, although they have shown that they're gonna go ahead. Right, they're going to go ahead. They also have Brandon Sproat hanging out down in the minors. He looks electric. If he gets a look in the bigs, he could be an impact guy. I think they are due to get Christian Scott back maybe halfway through the season, right? Luis Angel Acuna is kind of waiting in the wings. So Beatty, if you lose Vientos, very similar to what you're saying about the Yankees. All the holes that the Yankees have, the Mets and the Red Sox kind of have these backup plans in place. And that's just what it's killing me. You can hear my voice. As a handicapper, I really kind of separate myself from that. I've done very well betting against the Yankees. And I think this year's probably going to be a really good season to bet against the Yankees because the public doesn't know how to handle them. They always juice them up, right? There's a good percentage of the public that can't help but smash the favorite, that can't help but jam the Yankees run line into their parlays, and that's not the bet this year. I'm not taking any Yankee run lines this year. It's fixed. Anyway, NL East, I really like the Phillies, right? Hard not to, because they have the frontline pitching, and that order is devastating, but they're also a little bit long in the tooth, right? Phillies, is everybody over 30? Six of the first seven guys are over the age of 32, basically. Turner's going to be 32 in a month or so. So they might have some concerns there, though, 32 is maybe not quite what it was. Yeah, it's going to be a war. I tend to think of injuries working in pendulum. The Braves had nobody hurt 2 years ago, everybody hurt last year. And if they kind of get that porridge right in the middle where it's decent, I think they're going to be really good. I also tend to like some of those young starters, right? I mentioned Schwellenbach. He could be a legit frontline SP1. Sale is a legit SP1. I really like what they have in Grant Holmes also, right? So having that fourth or fifth guy that can go out and, you know, maybe get you 15 wins is going to be where I think the wheat separates from the chaff, right? I think that's probably the difference. I think the Braves' rotation is probably a little bit deeper than either the Phillies or the Mets. But if you told me they all end up with the same exact record, I probably believe it.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Excited to get going. Any parting thoughts? Any final anything we didn't discuss that you want to get out there? Any
Yes, there's
go.
one prop I've given out every single appearance I've made for the past 2 months because, you know, I'm a big Yankee guy. And it's funny, he's not a Yankee, but it goes to that. My dad's favorite player growing up was Mickey Mantle, right? He just had that player that he was so in love with because he was the best player of a generation when he could stay healthy. And mine is Mike Trout. You know, Mike Trout's home run prop is set at 25, and it's killing me, man. It is killing me. It's entirely too low. You know, I was doing the math for Gil the other day. Going back almost a decade, it's like 14 plate appearances per home run. So back of the napkin math means you're betting the under on 375 plate appearances. I just think we're really shorting this guy. And he's doing it right now in spring also. You know, he looks healthy. He's hitting massive nukes the other way. I mean, Mike Trout is a ridiculous talent. He's a ridiculous talent. I think he's the best hitter, again, of my lifetime. So I'm going to take the over on Mike Trout getting over 25 home runs. He could do that in 2 healthy months. So it's bothering me because to me, that's just too low. And it plays into that inability to predict injuries, right? You could tell me Trout's going to, but John, I can guarantee he's going to tear his ACL. But when? If it happens in October, he might be at $45 already. So yeah, give me Trout to the over.
Trout would be one where I'd be terrified to trade for him. But if anybody ever had the balls to do it, a Yankees, which they wouldn't absorb that contract, the Phillies, I know has been rumored.
Yeah,
there's still maybe 2 or 3 monster seasons in there. Now maybe you trade for him and it's a disaster and he plays 50 games a year and you say, what the hell did you do that for? The back of the baseball card, the writing was on the wall. You shouldn't have done that. But that's at least one that's interesting. I think it'd be good for baseball. It'd be good for Trout. It might be good for the Angels, just for both of them to part their separate ways. I don't know what that contract, if it's possible.
Yeah, I have to make my own rational counter though, and it's, you know, even Philly has Schwarber. Like, you know, you'd like to see him on a team where he could DH, but he's such a competitor. He insists on playing the outfield. And then the Angels went and brought in Soler, who is like, he's terrible. He's just terrible defensively. So it looks like they're going to be putting Trout into the outfield, which is probably suppressing that home run line. But I mean, he could get hurt also. We
sure
don't know how that stuff's going to shake out. But yeah, if Trout were to go somewhere where he is like a DH, then man, that line's, if you go, you know, then that line we're clearing. Although I push back. If he makes it to the All-Star break, he might be at 25 already.
Nope, absolutely. John, this was fun, man.
Oh,
Appreciate
I
the
love it,
time.
man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, find me at John Lagazza, JohnLagHezza. And again, that'll streamline, you know, all my stuff, Athletic, NBA Fantasy Life. I have a Substack. If you're really into betting and you like all the sheets and stuff, I put all my degenerate, you know, data in one spot because who wants 45 Chrome tabs open while there's 15 games going on? So, yeah, I appreciate you, man. Anytime you're back, I'll be glad.
Absolutely. Hopefully do it again
cool.
soon. Thanks.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to John Lagace. He'll be back Monday. See you then.